Hello and welcome to the Cloud Solution Architect podcast, where we talk to Azure architects from across the globe and discuss interesting and creative Azure solutions. This is your host, Anand Kumar. I work as a Cloud Solution Architect for Microsoft in the New York City region. For more Cloud Solution Architect podcast episodes, animated Azure videos, and simplified how-to content articles on Azure, please check out www.azuremonk.com. That's www.azuremonk.com. In this episode, we have with us Mohammed Faizal, who's one of the first 100 MVPs on Azure, who now works as a cloud solution architect with Microsoft in Azure. In this episode, we talk about several things from the very visible Crisp Pay project for Singapore Airlines, using blockchain as a service, to the cloud custodian program. Without further ado, let's get to the show. Hello, Faizal. It's great to have you on the show. Welcome.
Hey, great man. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Good morning. So before we get started, Faizal, so can you give us a brief introduction about yourself and the role that you currently play and the experience that you've had with Azure, right? The journey. How you started off with Azure and what are the kinds of, you know, the technologies that you work inside the Azure space?
Great. My name is Faizal. I started as a fast pro for DAS developer in the year of 1996. And actually, I converted to DAS pro for Windows and worked in Clipper, data DBase, and all kind of old programmings. Then in 2010, around the range, actually, I moved to Lotus Notes. 2000, I moved to Lotus Notes. Lotus Notes was picking up during that time. I was doing the collaboration projects and everything. Then in 2007, actually, I moved to SharePoint. And actually, I was working on SharePoint collaboration portal and all this thing because people move from the Lotus Notes to SharePoint. That is my task to migrate everybody. Mm-hmm. Then after that, actually, I went to, while I was looking at that, actually, I'm seeking where we can go. That's where the Azure Risk came to picture, which is 2010. So what I did in the year of 2010, basically, I was looking at the Azure and platform as a service, right? That's where we launched it. Mm-hmm. So I was doing the first project for the platform as a service. We did actually Access database. People are using it. One of the customer, my customer was using Access database. They say that, hey, I want to centralize this. Then we use the web role, worker role, and Azure SQL database and SQL reporting service, all this to automate centralizedly manage things. That's for the one of the Japanese customer that we did. Mm-hmm. After that, I become an Azure MVP in the year of 2011. The first 100 MVPs were awarded. I was one of them. And wow. I'm actually working for as an Azure MVP in the partner environment till year of 2015, I think 16, yeah, 2016, 5 years as an Azure MVP. After that, actually, I joined Microsoft Singapore as a TSP, now become a CSA last 3 years with Microsoft as of now. So that's how my journey is all about.
Got it. So just for the benefit of the listeners listening in, so CSA stands for Cloud Solution Architect, right?
And
can you explain B as well?
What is Technical Solution Professional. Okay. So, okay. That is how we actually name it.
Awesome. You've had a really, varied experience, right? You've started all the way from development, developer, and then been into Lotus Notes, SharePoint, and Azure MVP, one of the top 100, which is really cool. So from what I understand, you're working in the app dev space and also you work on data projects and the infrastructure. So there's no, you don't really specialize on one particular expertise, correct?
Yes. So because the nature of customer that I had, actually, I have actually need to manage a enterprise customer. So when I mm-hmm. joined Microsoft, actually, my portfolio is very big. I mm-hmm. have to manage a top 50 corporate account, then mm-hmm. enterprise account. Then I had to manage education, I need to manage healthcare, and I need to manage public sector. So later on, what happened is actually year progress, they cut down one by one, they actually put up dedicated team. So in that situation, right, so we have to learn all the aspect of it. So yep, that's how absolutely. I grow my entire career.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I mean, I can very well relate to, you know, the experience and the challenges that you're talking about. So is there any particular project, Faisal, that you're really proud about on the Azure side? I know you've had varied experience, but is there anything that stands out at the top of your mind? And do you want to give us details about that project?
Yeah, so what I will do actually, Anand, I worked on many projects in the various industries. So what I actually picked up some of the things that I can share with you know, various people that I can proud about myself that what I have done. Mm-hmm. See, one of them is actually is the loyalty program using blockchain.
Okay,
so
sounds
this
cool.
Actually is a very interesting project, as an early adopter of the one of the blockchain project. And this project also showcased in the Microsoft Ready internal, as well as this become a public case study for the in Microsoft portal as well. I will talk about that later bit. Then another one is the cloud adoption framework. So basically that is more interesting that the industry is moving. I'm working with a FSI customer and mainly infrastructure as a code, compliance as a code, policy as a code.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's the second piece that I can share more. The third is actually is the basically it is an AKS project, which is Azure Kubernetes Service project, and with machine learning and IoT in it. So that three project that I will talk about each one briefly. Mm-hmm. So let me go back to the first item, which is I talk about loyalty program. Just loyalty program for actually meant for Singapore Airlines. So if you go to Microsoft case study, you can find the Singapore Airlines case study in that. Okay. Basically, what we did actually, Singapore Airlines actually loyalty program called Crisp Flyer.
Okay.
So if you fly the airlines, you will get a miles, right? Basically, not only getting miles from the Crisp Flyer, you will also go to the Singapore Airlines partner companies. Like United, if you fly, you will be able to get the mileage for the Crisp Flyer mileage. If you have a credit card, if you have stayed in a Marriott hotel or different type of hotels and all this thing, there is a lot of partner ecosystem they have built. So you can be any of the loyalty, partners, then you can get the loyalty point using the Crisp Flyer, right, basically. That's how they operate. So what they thought actually, why don't we make a consortium? And can we able to have a blockchain-based loyalty program? So in the loyalty program, basically convert into a, what we call it, the Crisp Pay. So what we do actually, you can use the all the loyalty coming, and the loyalty can be converted into a digital wallet using Crisp Pay. So when you use actually is Crisp Pay, the all the miles you have, they will convert into a dollar value. Okay, that become a dollar for you. Then use the Crisp Pay and go to the stores and you can buy items.
Very interesting.
Okay, so that's how you can be, you know, a smart currency that can be a transfer in various places, various things, right? So this actually is done. And when we use this, we actually use the blockchain as a service, which is Microsoft, one of the things that we use, Ethereum and all these things for technology that we use inside. Then we also use a Cosmos DB, so which is globally available database that we have, right? So we actually did the Cosmos DB at the back end. We also use app services, app service environment, and also Azure B2C. For all this technology that we use, and KPMG was actually is one of the partner to implement the mobile application, which is the Crisp Pay mobile apps, right? So those things is actually is done by the KPMG as a partner. So this is the entire case study was actually available on Microsoft website, and this is what spoken very well in the all the blockchain industry. Everybody talks about everybody, you know, it was hot up the topic in the year in the 4 or 5 months ago. And also after we launched this, right, there are a lot of airlines actually reach out to us and asking about how do we move about it and do about this technologies. So this is one of the thing I can say proudly, yeah, it was very well done.
This is awesome. So how long ago was this project, Faisal? Because I know blockchain itself is relatively new as a technology wise, and you've had a a case study which is right now in the production scenario and people are actually using it, right? So this technology itself is pretty nascent. So how long ago was this implemented? And you know, when?
Yeah, so actually the entire thing is went on live sometimes in the month of May. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's in the February, May timeframe, we had trialed a period, and actually May 29, it went on live. Then the case study also published during that set time.
Got it, awesome. And you're saying this could be a reusable IP sort of thing, right? So other airlines, if they're interested, they can also reuse this. Oh, that's really great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's actually, that's what I'm saying, right? It's actually a big consortium they're trying to build. So there will be a more consortium coming into picture so that, you know, this Singapore Airlines can be a consortium for all other providers.
Mm-hmm.
It can use this pay as a platform to, you know, convert dollars into value.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's so awesome.
Yeah. So that's our first one, right? The second project as well I'm talking about actually is the Cloud Adoption Framework. You know, right, Microsoft right now, we are talking about internally as well as externally, is more emphasis on the Cloud Adoption Framework. The reason is actually is people are just going to migrate the workload Azure. Then after that, they are worrying about, you know, what is the control that I have? How do I comply to my regulatory, and how do I comply to my internal compliance team and all this thing, audit and everything, right? So because they need to have a proper planning before they migrate anything into the Azure. That's why we put a very clear framework for the Azure adoption, I mean, Cloud Adoption Framework. We have a very good web page, and we talk about medium and enterprise, all the customers, so on so. Right, so when we go to that, right, we mostly talking about a lot of things using Azure policies and Azure ARM template and all this kind of thing. But industry point of view, right, if you look at, if you go to the FSI customer, SMS customer, no, I don't want to use ARM template. Basically, ARM template is a proprietary to Microsoft. Anything I code, everything is actually, I have to use only this. I need to learn new skill. Mm-hmm. People are asking, can I do Terraform?
Mm-hmm.
So a Terraform as a code, infrastructure code, because I have a multi-cloud strategy, I want to use one coding technology. So I'm standardizing my everything using Terraform. The other thing is compliance as a code. So basically when I say compliance as a code, for example, Azure CIA is compliant, right? We have Azure Security Center, we can able to go and see what is the compliance, whether the workload that I put it is a compliant to Azure CIA or not. Whether PCDCI comply, whether actually SOC type 1 comply or not, all this we can able to do it. Mm-hmm. But the issue is actually is not all applicable to me. Mm-hmm. Then it is all actually what we have is we have only on the detection part. So most of the thing is the industry is what they're looking is how do I prevent before even happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So in the FSI industry, right, basically, they will have multiple subscriptions. Okay, mm-hmm. The subscription is short life. So maybe the subscription can be, you know, 10 days, the subscription could be 120 days.
Mm-hmm.
So basically after that, the subscription die itself. Mm-hmm. So in that kind of situation, I can't go and govern every single subscription. Every time that go, I cannot audit and I cannot wait for it, right? So what they're trying to look at, they are trying to looking at the everything I want to be a code. So when I have a pipeline, it's like what we call DevSecOps, right? Basically. Mm-hmm. So I will have a pipeline. In the pipeline, I will actually put everything inside. So example, I will ask a certain type of question to my internal customer. Let's say, for example, do you need a 3-tier architecture? Do you need a 2-tier architecture? Do you need internet for this application? Is there your database needed internet access or not? Kind of question that they will ask.
Okay.
Based on the question, what we did actually, we defined the patterns. So mm-hmm. we defined the around 10 patterns of the applications. And then based on the questions they answer, this will pick up a pattern. That pattern will be provisioned automatically in the new subscription.
Hmm.
And that becomes a spoke model. Okay. Then we have hub already. Predefined hub. The mm-hmm. hub is actually is the image management, or any image that need provision for the spoke will be retrieved from the hub. We will have a baked image. We will have an image management where we have an image shared image gallery. We will put the image. Then the image already hardened, already actually have a VA checked, all the extension needed for it, we will have everything.
Correct.
Okay.
And then, Faisal, yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt. So just for the benefit of the listeners listening, right? So you said it's a hub and a spoke, and I believe you're not referring only to the networking piece. In the hub and spoke, you're referring to the overall subscription itself, right? Because you're talking about image management.
Yeah.
Is
so,
that right? Okay.
All right, let me expand that. Thanks for asking that. So basically what we are trying to do, we are trying to do a hub and spoke model. When we say hub, right, for example, I can have one express route circuit. The express route circuit actually is a one hub. Then the hub right can able to use the same circuit to connect the multiple spoke. Okay, then I can have a monitoring hub where actually, for example, as I mentioned before, right, my subscription is very short life. So it could be 10 days, it could be 120 days. But what happened in the subscription, I need to take all the activity log, all the diagnostic log into a centralized location. So when the provision, the spoke subscription, we automatically connect to the centralized workspace. We automatically connect to the centralized storage account. So this is all what we call it as a hub subscription. The hub actually is the control the policies as well as the control all the necessary data that need to be there.
Got it. Awesome.
All the spoke, all the spoke actually is the every project that we deploy or workload that we deployed. So this all connect to the hub. So that's how we envision this. So then we did everything. When we do this, right, so what we want to do actually, we want to prevent. So if there isn't only certain things can be done, for example, in FSA industry is not all the regions because Azure has a 54 region.
Right?
So do I, if the moment you have a subscription, you can deploy any of the region, right?
Right.
So how do I prevent? So, but in the bank, in the FSI point of view, I only approved four region, three region. Okay. I want to deploy resources only these region. I can put up policies to do it, right? Then I can able to have rules saying that the tier one, which is what we call web tier, right? Web tier one, I don't want to have I can have only public ICA for associated for web tier. Anything on app tier, database tier, no public IP can be associated. How do I prevent that, right? So people trying to go and attach the public IP to the VM that is running on the app tier, right? I have to deny that. So I can set a policy saying that for this subnet, don't allow anything. Okay, I can write a custom policy, I can put it. So these kind of thing, what we are trying to do it, make sure that all this actually baked in as a code. When you click a button, it actually deploy all the code and the subscription is ready.
Got it, got it. Okay. Cloud adoption framework. So that itself, I see a lot of use cases for the cloud adoption framework, particularly in the case of central IT organizations who spin up a lot of subscriptions to their child agencies or organizations, right? And the questionnaire that you talked about, that I feel like that's going to be really, really helpful. The questionnaire as to, hey, is this going to have a public IP? Is this not going to have a public IP? What's the kind of architecture that you have? Is that questionnaire built into the DevOps pipeline?
So what we did actually, I mean, what the customer actually trying to do, they will have a cloud factory, basically. They will have a web page where they will ask this all these questions. Based on the question, we have defined around 10 patterns. So based on the question, it will pick up the pattern automatically. The DevOps pipeline will figure out and go and pull respective Terraform models and build this and send it.
I see. Very interesting. And you said you're using Terraform and not the ARM templates, right? Because you want it to be uniform. If they have multiple cloud providers, they want to have a single language and they don't want to have I've had a lot of customers who don't really want to take the effort of learning an ARM template, although I personally like ARM template, but yeah, this is really great using Terraform.
Yeah, so basically the customers trying to do what trying to do, they're taking Terraform and actually they are using Ansible and as well as Python to bundle it and actually Nomad to configure it and send it everything. So that's how we actually do it, everything. So this is what actually talk about prevent, right? So the second part is detect. So the detect is more interesting part of it, right? So let's say, for example, I put a policy, but I am the owner of the subscription. Okay, what I can do, I can go and turn up the policy, I can deploy whatever I want, correct?
Right, right.
So how do I detect if something happened? So what we build, actually, we build the various use cases. We try to, monitor the users and try to detect what is going on in the each and every subscriptions. And after detection, we want to do auto remediation. So example, right, we don't want people to add port 22, port 3389 in any of the VMs. So the moment that they add any of the port on this, right, we can automatically remediate. So what we did, actually, initial phase, what I did, actually, I wrote up Azure function and monitor the activity log and actually take the log of the any NSG rule added. Then I will take the log and I will go and loop it and see whether port 22, port 3389 added. Then if I added that, I'll come back and delete the rule. So using Azure function ID, then after that, right, we discover and we realize that this can be more efficient way of doing rather than doing this way. Then we went to a cloud custodian. I hope you are aware of this. This is actually done by the Capital One Bank. Then actually they have made it as open source. So what we did, actually went to cloud custodian and we look at the YAML script and everything. Some of the scenarios was missing. Then we actually explore that. There is a more better way of doing it. After that, we have in Microsoft, right? We have a CSC engineering team, right? So basically, we went to the team and we seek help. They actually come to help us, and we come up with a lot of scenarios. And right now, those things, whatever I'm talking about, like a port removal of port 22 to port 3389. You can go and see in the cloud custodian page, we already updated all this. We already did develop something. We actually made it open source as well.
Got it.
So this is for the auto remediation that we did, detect and auto remediation.
Got it. Excellent. So you're saying this is, to the benefit of people listening. So this is an open source framework which people can adopt, and they can also customize it if it doesn't exactly fit into their requirement. They can always pick and choose the kind of configuration they want to auto remediate. And for the people who are coming in from the PowerShell world, this, you can think of this more like a desired state configuration. Is that right?
So the thing is, the only difference is whatever you say is exactly right. So they can go and look at the cloud custodian and then they can see what is available. If they want to customize, they can also put a request in the cloud custodian page where our internal team look at and they can able to help. Or if they want to open, so they want to do it themselves also, we can able to help them. I mean, they can do it themselves and they can approach cloud custodian to incorporate it. Okay, so that's given. The second part is a desired state configuration. Yes, in a way like that, but it is for infrastructure piece, not for the inside the VM.
Yeah, absolutely, that makes sense. So great. So I will go ahead and put the links for the cloud custodian that you talked about and also the cloud adoption framework. So if people want to use this and leverage this cool platforms, they can absolutely do so.
Yeah, so the only thing is actually a benefit of this doing it right. You do once and you will be able to reuse for multiple times, many times all this, right? So in the consumption world, this helps you to accelerate your consumption faster once it's actually ready. That's what I see as a thing. It's ready to go to market any point in time and you can speed at scale and you don't need to worry about compliance, security. So all of them done once, it is taken care for any organization.
Awesome. Very cool.
So that's actually my second piece of the work that I proud of it. And then the third piece actually is the, we actually did the, the wastewater is everywhere. You have wastewater, right? So the wastewater that we collect right? We process the wastewater in the industry, correct? Basically.
Yeah.
When you want to process the wastewater, basically, once you process it, supply to the industries for many big industries buy this wastewater, then they process it. I mean, they use for some other purpose, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So the project that we did recently with one of the customer, we actually monitor the entire the wastewater equipment that is going on.
Okay.
So we use IoT sensors to monitor, and we actually use data lake project to predict what kind of thing that we can able to do, how we can able to fasten the process of this and all this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually about 200,000 sensors that we deployed. We collect the data using Stream Analytics. We use mm-hmm. Azure ML to process it, all the data.
Mm-hmm.
Then we can able to get a better outcome of this entire thing. So this is another thing that we did using the AKS, because I mean, Azure Kubernetes Service is another biggest thing, then Azure ML is another biggest thing that we did recently. This is another awesome. One I can proudly say that, yeah, these are three things we did.
Mm-hmm. Right, and absolutely. So you said IoT takes in the water sensor data, and for a technology to scale, and if it needs to scale at this range, I think Azure Kubernetes Service is the right fit for this, right? Yeah.
So then another one is we also did the, all the green energy. So you have solar mm-hmm. panel everywhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
We collect the sensor from there, and we actually see how much power it is actually generating. And these powers can be stored into the blockchain.
Mm-hmm.
Then when enterprise use, they buy certificate from the blockchain, then they're actually able to use it. This is for another customer we did as well, using blockchain as certificate.
Oh, that's awesome. And going back to the water management project, right? So you said you're using the machine learning, Azure machine learning as well. So is the machine learning used to sort of predict when the water quality might go down? Is that the use case that you're using machine learning for?
It's for the quality plus how much chemical I need to give. What is the chemical range? This pattern of the water comes in, what would be the chemical range? If this mm-hmm. pattern of the water, then what would be,
Got it. So you want to make it more precision based, adding chemicals in a precision way and also making sure the wastage is less. Oh, man, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's where you have a lot of savings for the organization, right?
Yep, absolutely. I think this directly translates to revenue, and it's a win-win for everybody. Yeah.
Okay. Then the quality of water also is most important by doing this.
Absolutely. Yeah. Awesome. So Faisal, you talked about the three projects that you worked on, and I can clearly say that it ranges all the way from B2C to blockchain to Kubernetes. You've worked on a variety of technologies inside the Azure space, and I would say most of them the latest niche technologies, right? So for budding new Azure architects, if somebody who's just starting off into the Azure architecture space, what would be your sort of tips and tricks or advice to those people?
For me, Anand, to be passionate about the things what you are doing, you love it, okay, and you go deep into that and understand the customer need. Don't jump to a solution or putting the product in place. Understand the problem statement. Go into the what actually, if I propose this, what customer will get outcome. Look at the outcome and try to meet the outcome, and you select the product. That's how I do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So to me is very simple. Understand customer need. That will help you to, succeed in this area. Otherwise, you will not able to succeed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can totally relate, right? So it usually happens that if you end up learning a new technology, you want to apply it everywhere. So any customer who comes with a problem, you feel like the scenario where they have a hammer and a nail, right? So if you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail to you. But that's a very good point, right? So you have to really understand the business problem before jumping into a solution and providing them with the actual features and the technology. Understand the big business problem first, right? Excellent.
Yeah.
So you do, you know, like I said again, you've worked on multiple technologies and you've constantly changed your technology path all along your way, from SharePoint to Lotus Notes and to Azure, and now to the machine learning space as well. So what is it that you do to keep up with the latest technology changes and the latest new trends? I know it's changing at an extremely rapid pace. What's your technique or your routine to keep up with, you know, the latest trends?
So this is a very simple strategy that I follow, Anand. Basically, whenever I meet people also, I do recommend this because I have a user group that I run in Singapore. I have about 5,000 members in my user groups.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm running this since 2007. I have a meetup, and the one thing that what I do, if I want to learn something, I go and commit to the user group.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then I will put myself into that and I will learn it and I will go and present it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that is my first part of the learning, right? The thing mm-hmm. that I want. Second thing is actually is, you know, right, the cloud is rapidly changing. And as you rightly point out, last year itself, we actually released about 800 to 900 new functionality features in Azure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which means every day we go to bed and next day morning we wake up, we have to learn two to three things in the Azure space, right? That's in our life, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the one thing is what I do actually, I actually follow the Azure update very frequently.
Mm-hmm.
Then I follow a lot of product manager in Tutor.
Can you expand on that a little bit, the product manager in Tutor?
So let's say, for example, right, I have Azure Storage product manager, and I have various product manager that I know aware of it in Microsoft. I can go to their Tutor handle. I will subscribe mm-hmm. to their Tutor handle.
Got it. I see what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Then actually, I will keep monitoring my Tutor every day. I spend half an hour to 1 hour in my Tutor when mm-hmm. I work computing. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I learn for new updates. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then I will also go and listen to the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing that I do. So I do Azure Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Then I do for the other one is Kubernetes podcast by Google.
Oh, awesome.
Then I do Amazon AWS podcast so that I know what is my compete.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So every day actually I have basically this is what I do, right? Friday is Azure, Wednesday is Kubernetes, then there is a Monday or a Tuesday, I'm not wrong, there is a one for two AWS I have subscribed, so mm-hmm. either one I listen, depends on the topic.
Mm-hmm.
So this is my regular routine that I do. On top of it, actually, as you know, right, so the other a simple strategy that I have, if I go to customer, if customer asking me and a topic or actually the solution that I'm going to propose, if I'm not deep dive into that solution, I go to internal portal, I'll try to get the video, then I will try to listen to that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is how I keep up my entire learning path mm-hmm. To update myself.
Yeah, I think that's a very, you have a very clearly defined learning path, rather I should say. And to be honest, you know, everything that you said can be easily incorporated into the daily life of any Azure architect or an Azure, anybody who's working on Azure, right? So, for example, listening to a podcast or following some an Azure product manager on their social media platform, I think it's much easier and you get the information immediately as soon as it's released. That's excellent. All right, Faisal, so I'm going to put a link to everything that you mentioned now, right, from the podcast that you follow and the Azure product managers, if you have any. I'd also like to put a link on those people.
I'll also share another one with you, Anand. You can also put it that the CAF that I talk about, right, what mm-hmm. we did internally, we have formed a team in this part of the world, okay? We have a few architects that we joined together. What we did actually, we did a Terraform coding.
Mm-hmm.
And we made it actually publicly available. We have a GitHub repository.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We want more people to contribute and more people to do it. I will also share that link. Then you can also put it inside. people can readily use all the thing hub and spoke model that I talk about. Is all of them are very, very well defined at the moment. And then they can take it and reuse it, and they can also contribute.
Wow, that'll be excellent. That'll be great. Thank you. Excellent, Faisal. So I think this is really, really helpful, especially the information that you gave on the different projects that you worked on, your techniques to keep up with new trends. Personally, I find it really helpful, and I'm sure all the audience will find it extremely helpful as well. And I know you are, in the other side of the world in Singapore, exactly 12 hours difference from New York. But if people need to find you online, what's the best way that they can reach out to you?
So the thing is actually my LinkedIn and my Twitter, both I have. I can share my both links with you.
Absolutely.
So that's a two way to reach me in the social media. So I can respond to them immediately.
Perfect. I'll go ahead and put a link to everything that we talked about in this podcast in the description link for the podcast. So you'll be able to find Faisal. Once again, Faisal, thank you so much for being on the show. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Arun.